And now, Stein Online presents Mark Stein on the Town.
Hello, Mark. This is Hugh Martin. It's saying, have yourself a merry little Christmas.
When the steeple bells sound their A, they don't play it in tune. But the welkin will ring one day, and that day will be soon. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Thousands of singers sing it, but he's the guy who wrote it, Hugh Martin. He did a lot of things in his life: composer, lyricist, vocal arranger, pianist, singer, actor. He did all of them well, and some of them brilliantly. Hugh died on Friday, March 11th, at the grand old age of 96, which meant he lived long enough to hear his Christmas song sung by Bob Dylan.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight.
And Keisha Cole.
So have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the old tide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away.
And Christina Aguilera. Of your Oh, and Twisted Sister.
Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more.
Okay, that's enough, Twisted Sister. Have yourself a merry little Christmas comes from the same movie as this.
How can I ignore the boy next door? I love him more than I can say.
And this.
Clang, clang, clang went the Charlie. Ding, 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 ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heartstrings. For the moment I saw her, I fell.
1944, Meet Me in St. Louis from MGM. We'll hear a lot of Hugh Martin songs in this tribute, not all of them sung by Twisted Sister. And we'll hear Hugh himself performing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas live on the Mark Stein Christmas Show. Plus me and Jessica Martin will take a slightly different crack at the song. As longtime listeners may recall, Hugh joined me on a couple of Christmas shows over the years, and we'll dip into the archives to hear some of that as we look back on his life. On one of those occasions, back in the 90s, I had the pleasure of telling him that according to the number of new versions released that holiday season, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas had caught up with White Christmas as the number one Christmas ballad. Hugh was a little stunned by that.
Is that true? Can that be possible? It seems like a dream. Because when I grew up, White Christmas was so far ahead of the pack that I never thought anyone would catch up to it.
Well, Hugh wasn't actually growing up at the time White Christmas came out. White Christmas and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas appeared within a couple of years of each other in the early 1940s. But Irving Berlin was the most famous songwriter in America, and Hugh Martin was all but unknown, and in fact not so very different from those boys in uniform overseas to whom White Christmas meant so much, spending the holiday season far from home. Hugh was a guy in the army at Camp Hood in Texas, about to wind up at the Battle of the Bulge and a near miss with the Grim Reaper. Hugh Martin was born on the eve of an earlier World War, in that fateful month of August 1914 in Birmingham, Alabama. I think of him as a courtly Southern gentleman, and through all the years on Broadway and in Hollywood, that Southern lilt never left his voice.
The story of my life? Don't ask me that question. It's much too tawdry to tell. The story of my life, or most of that saga, I don't remember too well. Love was the thing I had the most of. My life was a crazy quilt. It wasn't a life a guy could boast of, but I lived it to the hilt.
You were given your first big break in the 30s by Richard Rodgers. What other musical influences were there on you as a young man?
Well, whatever I did that was good, I learned from Kay Thompson. Do you know who Kay Thompson is?
Absolutely. She did that marvelous version of Jingle Bells that Andy Williams
and Williams yes, that's right. And, of course, she was marvelous in Funny Face. You saw that, didn't you?
Oh, that's a great movie.
Well, she was my mentor and taught me everything I know about vocal arranging. I was her rehearsal pianist, and I just sort of picked up everything I could from her. I just watched her like a hawk and tried to learn from her, and I feel that I'm certainly not as good as she is as a vocal arranger. I think she's the absolute top. She's so inventive, so creative. Like, I love her.
Hello, 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 and howdy-do. How've you been, and hoop-de-doo, and a big fat western howdy.
Howdy.
Top of the evening to you. Come on, tally-boo. Salutations and greetings to you. Bonjour, bonsoir. Cheerio and goody good evening. And now say hello to the girl of our dreams. The fabulous, fabulous girl of our dreams. She's glamorous, amorous, chic and swan, yay. We give you the one and only Kay Thompson, Kay Thompson, Kay Thompson, Kay Thompson.
Hello, 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 and thanks so much. Your greeting is enough to touch my heart. Ooh, it's great to be here. Friendly faces to see here. And now that all the formalities are through, I think we may as well get... Ah, you haven't all met.
No!
Then there's something that I'd like to do, and that's introduce the boys to you.
And she did introduce the boys. She introduced Hugh Martin to a fella called Ralph Blaine. Kay Thompson is best remembered these days as the author of the Eloise books, nothing to do with music at all, but she was a phenomenal talent. And in the 30s, she had a radio show on CBS. When she offered Hugh Martin the gig as her rehearsal pianist, he went round to her pad on Madison Avenue just to establish that he was what she was looking for. He was just off the midnight choo-choo from Alabama and not aware that you don't call on show people at 8 in the morning. But a bleary Miss Thompson staggered down and said that since he'd shown up, he might as well watch her have her first coffee and cigarette of the day. And after listening to him play, she said could he come back at noon because she was auditioning a singer and she'd like him to accompany the guy. The singer was a young man from Oklahoma, classically trained, who put a great long tapeworm of sheet music up on the piano, an art song, and Hugh Martin watched as it drooped off both ends of the stand. Don't you have any pop songs? Asked Kay Thompson. No, said Ralph Blaine. But Hugh Martin offered to teach him how to sing jazz, and so Ralph also got the job that day. So on that one day, Hugh met two of the most important figures in his career. On the radio, Miss Thompson was backed by a jazz choir, 13 female voices, 3 male. One day in rehearsal, Hugh suggested to her that one section might sound nice with 4-part male harmony. 4-part. She looked at him skeptically, and then put him in the act.
You're a lucky guy. When you consider the highest bidder can't buy the gleam in your eyes.
You're a lucky guy.
Thank you, lucky star.
You got a honey who wants no money. She'll take you just as you are.
Thank you, lucky star.
Hey, fella, say, fella, don't you realize it's fate that you raised to open up your eyes.
You're a lucky guy. You're just beginning to have your ending and let your troubles go by.
Just beginning, so have your ending. Your head is spinning, so let your troubles go by.
No one can deny.
You're a lucky guy.
Lucky guy.
You're a lucky guy.
You're a lucky guy.
I mentioned earlier that Richard Rodgers played an important role in Hugh Martin's career, and it came about like this. After spending all his time watching Kay Thompson come up with these terrific vocal arrangements for her radio show and her nightclub act, Hugh Martin would then go to the theatre in New York and find what he heard not terribly impressive. And as his favourite writers at the time were Rodgers and Hart, he decided to write to Richard Rodgers as follows. He said, Dear Mr. Rodgers, and he made some nice remarks about the quality of Rodgers' music and Hart's lyrics, and then said, "It's precisely because your songs are so great that I dare to ask this question. Why do I never hear anything resembling a vocal arrangement when I go to see a Broadway musical? I certainly hear the most wonderful songs being written anywhere in the world today, but I feel cheated when I hear nothing more imaginative than a verse and two choruses. I realize I've a heck of a nerve writing such seemingly critical thoughts to a giant like you, but honestly, Mr. Rodgers, I'm simply asking for information, not in a spirit of criticism. Your grateful admirer, Hugh Martin." Well, after he mailed the letter, he realized, wow, I must be out of my mind writing to Mr. Broadway in those terms. But nevertheless, a couple of days later, he got a call asking if he could hurry on down to the Alvin Theatre because Mr. Rodgers wanted to meet with him. And Rodgers did want to meet with him and had considered his point and asked him whether he'd like to take a crack at a song they were going to use in a show called The Boys from Syracuse. Rodgers had digested the criticism and thought that this song in particular might benefit from a third chorus using three-part harmony, the sort of thing that a three-girl vocal group might do. And what Hugh Martin came up with, in effect, became part of the song. So this is the number that started Hugh Martin's Broadway career as a vocal arranger.
Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast songbirds always eat. If their song is sweet to hear, sing for your luncheon and you'll get dinner, dine with wine of choice. If romance is in your voice, I heard from a wise canary trilling, makes you willing. So little swallow, swallow low. Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds are not dumb. They don't buy a crumb of bread, it's said. So sing and you'll be fed. Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds always eat. If the song is sweet to choice. If romance is in your voice, I heard from a voice canary trilling, makes a fellow willing. So little swallow, swallow now. Now is the time to sing for your supper. You'll get breakfast. Songbirds are not dumb. Sing instead. You don't have to buy even a crumb of bread, it said. You'll be fed if you sing. So dance. So sing and you'll be fed.
Among Hugh Martin's favourite vocal arrangements was one he did for a show by Vernon Duke and John Latouche. Duke called him in and said that the big song in the score was Taking a Chance on Love, and because that was going down so well, he wanted to do something to perk up the title song, which he felt was a bit undernourished by comparison. So Hugh Martin wound up arranging the number for one of his very favourite singers, Ethel Waters, And what he did was he, for the second chorus, was he had the chorus singing Duke's terrific melody, and he wrote an obbligato for Ethel Waters to sing against it. This proved so popular that for a while in the 1940s, Ethel Waters impersonators, when they did this number, always used to include her obbligato. This is the title song from the Broadway hit Cabin in the Sky.
There's a little cabin in the sky, mister.
Ethel Waters was Hugh Martin's favourite singing voice. He once said to me that one reason he was opposed to abortion was because he discovered that Ethel Waters was a child of rape, and he didn't like to think about what the world would have lost had Ethel Waters' mother opted for abortion. Ethel Waters, the title song from Cabin in the Sky. By now, Hugh Martin was not just a vocal arranger, he also had his own vocal group, the Martins, featuring himself, Ralph Blaine, the young singer he'd met round at Kay Thompson's that morning, and two sisters, Jo Jean and Phyllis Rogers.
This is Mitzi Green, and I'm introducing the four Martins. We have a few arrangements that we'd like to sing. We hope that you enjoy them.
Good morning. Good morning, we've started all night long. Good morning, dear teacher, to
Jo Jean, Phyllis, Ralph, and you.
Hey, good morning to you.
Good morning, children, good morning.
We've brought an apple to you, Mitzi.
Good morning to you.
It's 1941. What would be even more fun than being a top vocal arranger? Being a top Broadway composer.
Recently, a Broadway producer sat down with his director and said,
"We got a surefire show, but who can we get to write the music?"
"Got just the person for you. Hugh Martin."
"Martin?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's only a kid. We need lyrics, too."
"You must be a mind reader. The kid can do that, too."
What goes with this young Hugh Martin? He writes words, music. Is he any good? Well, all you have to do is try to get a ticket for his new musical, and your questions will be answered. We, the people, want you to meet him, so we've hung the welcome sign on our Gulf Oil microphone tonight for Broadway's newest top songwriter, Hugh Martin.
Well, that's not quite the way it happened. The real story is this. Ralph Blaine, who was singing with Hugh Martin in the vocal group The Martins, happened to live in the same apartment building as Van Johnson, who wasn't a big Hollywood star then. He was just a working actor singing in the chorus of the Rogers and Hart show Pal Joey, directed by George Abbott. And the word around the dressing rooms was that Mr. Abbott had the script for a new musical, but that this time he didn't want Rogers and Hart or any of the big A-list guys. The show was about young kids, so he wanted a young, fresh, new team to write the score. So Van Johnson says to Ralph Blaine, "Hey, Ralph, Why don't you audition for that? And Ralph Blaine says, I've never written a song in my life. And Van Johnson says, so write one, write two, write three. Why don't you write some songs with Hugh? He can help you out. You and Hugh should write a couple of songs and go up for the job. So they did. And in landing the assignment, they set George Abbott on his second career, not just the director of the preferred director of Rodgers and Hart, but a man who came to be known as the apprentice's sorcerer. That's to say, he would take Broadway newcomers and turn them into top composers and lyricists. After this show with Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine, Mr. Abbott did the first Broadway shows of Leonard Bernstein, Betty Comden and Adolph Green, Frank Lesser, who went on to do Guys and Dolls, Julie Stein, who went on to do Gypsy, and Sammy Kern, and Adler and Ross, Pajama Game, Damn Yankees. He did Stephen Sondheim's first show as a composer-lyricist. But it all began with this show with Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine. On one of the last occasions I saw George Abbott, he was 106 years old. He was working on a revival of Damn Yankees. And he said to me, I mentioned him, I was going to see Hugh Martin. He said, oh, send Hugh my regards. Hugh was absolutely delighted, as who wouldn't be to be sent best wishes from a 106-year-old pal.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Oh, you've made my day. That's so exciting. Isn't he extraordinary? He was extraordinary when he was at a normal age, and now he's super extraordinary.
When you worked with him, he was a comparatively young man in late middle age.
He certainly seemed young. He was extremely strong and potent, and everyone really looked up to him. He was like a king.
And you were the first of the many teams of young songwriters that he gave a helping hand.
Yes, I believe I was. Adler and Ross came a little later, and Comden and Green, Well, I never think of Bernstein as being a young writer exactly, but he was. He was, yeah.
Young writers for a young show. Best foot forward.
Listen, gang, I don't care what's happened here. There's such a thing as school spirit. Now, who's the cheerleader?
Hawkins!
Oh, the freshman, huh?
No, sir, the junior.
The junior, yeah. Well, let's see a little bit of the old fight. Now, get behind me, some of you. If you shout hooray for the Pennsylvania Dutchman, they will cover the ground for a number one down or a touch. Everyone is agreed that you have to concede to the Dutchman. Shout hooray for the Pennsylvania Dutch.
If you shout hooray for the Pennsylvania Dutch.
They needed a name for the fictional school. It should have win in it, said John Cecil Home, the librettist. Yeah, something with sock, said Richard Rogers. Okay, said Ralph Blaine. How about Winsocky?
Hey!
Buckle down, Winsocky, buckle down. You can win Winsocky if you knuckle down.
If you break their necks, if you make them wrecks, you can break the hex, so buckle down.
Now, according to the sheet music, that song was written by you and Ralph Blaine, your great collaborator, but you had a rather unusual working relationship.
Well, we never collaborated. We only collaborated once, and that was on a little throwaway song in Best Foot Forward called Three Men on a Date.
Three men, three mates on a date. We're men whose dates got the gate. We're wearing our hearts on our sleeve for California's Lady Eve. Three men, three mates in a room. We're men
whose dates met their doom.
We're casting our line for a fish, for California's favorite dish.
Other than that, our songs were written separately and we pooled them.
Yes, that's the same way Lennon and McCartney worked.
Did they do that? I believe it. I've heard that Adler and Ross did it too. I'm not sure.
So Hugh Martin wrote words and music, and Ralph Blaine wrote words and music, and then they pretended that every song was written by Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine. And as far as I know, nobody ever did that before. I mean, W.S. Gilbert didn't write words and music, and Arthur Sullivan wrote words and music, and then they pretended that the scores were by Gilbert and Sullivan, and George Gershwin didn't write words and music, and then happened to run into a fella called Ira Gershwin, who also wrote words and music, so they decided to team up as George and Ira Gershwin. But nevertheless, that is the way Hugh Martin Martin and Ralph Blaine worked. And when it came time to audition their score for George Abbott, Mr. Abbott felt he didn't know enough about song, so he called in Richard Rodgers to sit in the room and evaluate the score. And at the big moment, Ralph Blaine got up and sang as he does here.
Buckle down, Winsocky, buckle down. You can win, Winsocky, if you knuckle down. If you break their necks, if you make them wrecks, you can break the hex, so buckle down. Make him yell, Winsocky, make him yell. You can win, Winsocky, if you ring the bell. If you don't give in, take it on the chin. You are bound to win if you will only buckle down. If you fight, you'll chuckle.
Ralph Blaine's performance of that song sold Richard Rodgers on the score, and when Best Foot Forward opened, it sold audiences too. It was the big showstopper. And as Hugh Martin told me, he found himself in the bizarre position of going around Broadway being congratulated on a big hit song he had absolutely nothing to do with writing.
If you go to town, you can wear the crown. Shout hooray, shout hooray, shout hooray. Winsocky!
Winsocky. The great Jerome Kern said to Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine, I think it's disgracefully unpatriotic of you to write Buckle Down Winsocky when we're at war with Japan. Best Foot Forward had an odd effect on people like that. Gene Kelly, the choreographer on the show, said to Hugh, I've realized I'm never going to make it as a performer. From now on, I'm just doing choreography. As we know, a couple of years later, he was one of the biggest stars in Hollywood. Hugh himself began dating Nancy Walker, the star of the show, who's better known to TV audiences as Rhoda's mom. And in the wake of Best Foot Forward, he got an offer from Hollywood. He and Ralph Blaine went out to MGM to become not only songwriters, but also, as far as Hugh was concerned, a vocal arranger. He regards this as one of the most important vocal arrangements he ever wrote. It wasn't Rodgers and Hart or Irving Berlin or Vernon Duke, just an old folk song.
Sunday, go to meeting and I'll take you by the hand. If you will be my dancing partner, we will dance to beat the band. So join the promenade and lead the big parade. And if you don't get home at all, your pa will understand. So choose your partner, skip to Maloo. Choose your partner, skip to Maloo. Choose your partner, skip to Maloo. Skip to Maloo, my darling. Flies in the buttermilk, shoo, shoo, shoo. Flies in the buttermilk, shoo, shoo, shoo. Flies in the buttermilk, shoo, shoo, shoo. Skip to Maloo, my darling.
I'll be glad to go with you, so prithee do not tarry. But if I do, it's up to you to let me dance with Harry.
Skip to Maloo.
John.
Skip to Maloo.
Charlie.
Skip to Maloo. Skip to Maloo, my darling.
The Martin singing Hugh Martin's infectious arrangement of Skip to My Loo.
Skip to My Loo. Skip to My Loo.
Hugh wasn't just a songwriter and vocal arranger at MGM. He was also a vocal coach responsible for coaching the studio singing stars. Nina Horne, Judy Garland, Esther Williams, June Allison, on and on. And he taught his arrangement of Skip to My Loo to a blonde starlet called Marilyn Maxwell. She was a former trapeze artist. Marilyn sang Skip to My Loo for Arthur Freed, the head of the musicals unit, at an audition.
Lost my partner, skip to my loo. Lost my partner, skip to my loo. Lost my partner, skip to my loo, my darling. I'll find another one prettier than you, and go to another party.
Marilyn didn't get the job, but But the very next day, Arthur Freed called up Hugh Martin and said he'd heard Skip to My Lou, and he thought Hugh and Ralph Blaine were just the guys to write the score for a new picture he was planning called Meet Me in St. Louis.
Corner boy, buck, and we were corner girl.
And if you've seen Meet Me in St. Louis, you'll know that Hugh's arrangement of Skip to My Lou turns up in the film.
Everybody dance!
Sounding oddly contemporary for a story set in 1904.
Lost my partner. Lost my partner. Lost my partner.
Skip to My Lou, my darling.
I'll find another one prettier than you. I'll find another one prettier than you. I'll find another one prettier than you. Go to another party. Oh,
I'll fly away to a neighboring state. I don't care what my friends say. We'll dance and sing till broad daylight. I won't get home till Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Skip, 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 skip,
movie was Meet Me in St. Louis, produced by Arthur Freed for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, directed by Vincent Minnelli and starring Judy Garland. And although Meet Me in St. Louis is a full-blown musical, the score is really only three songs. You only wrote three new songs for the picture. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, The Trolley Song, and The Boy Next Door.
Well, I think God did bless me on that movie. I think they're about the three best songs I've ever written. And I'm just so blessed that they came just when I needed them.
How can I ignore the boy next door? I love him more than I can say. Doesn't try to please me, doesn't even tease me, and he never sees me glance his way. And though I'm heart sore, the boy next door affection for me won't display. Adore him, so I can't ignore him, the boy next door.
Meet Me in St. Louis was based on the semi-autobiographical stories by Sally Benson about growing up in turn of the century St. Louis at 5135 Kensington Avenue. It's set at the time of the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis. And Hugh Martin used to consider that song the best song he ever wrote. It has a lot of admirers. Alec Wilder used to say that it was based on a device, the series of suspended dominant ninth chords. But the overall effect in the first eight bars, but the overall effect is so intense and personal. It's a wonderfully true song. The other big song that Hugh Martin wrote for Me in St. Louis comes from the opposite end of the spectrum, a driving production number. We all know there are lots of great American train songs, but this is the Trolley Song.
With my high starch collar and my high top shoes and my hair piled high up on my head, I went to lose a jolly hour on the trolley and lost my heart instead. With his light brown derby and his bright green tie, he was quite the handsomest of men. I started to yen, so I counted to ten, then I counted to ten again. Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heart strings. From the moment I saw him, I fell. chug, chug, chug went the motor. Bump, bump, bump went the brakes. Thump, thump, thump went my heartstrings. When he smiled, I could feel the car shake. He tipped his hat and took a seat. He said he hoped he hadn't stepped upon my feet. He asked my name, I held my breath. I couldn't speak because he scared me half to death. Chug, chug, chug went the motor. Plop, plop, plop went the wheels. Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings. As he started to go, then I started to know how it feels when the universe reels.
Meet Me in St. Louis is a short score, but it's three songs between them. Contain one of the all-time great beginnings and one of the all-time great endings in popular song. Here's the great beginning. This has more repeated notes than any other song in the repertoire. I believe 24 repeated notes. And the reason they're repeated is because they're imparting the important information that she lives at 5135 Kensington Avenue and he lives at 5133.
Him smile, I knew he was just my style. My only regret is we've never met, though I dream of him all the while. But he doesn't know I exist. No matter how I may persist, so it's clear to see there's no hope for me, though I live at 5135 Kensington Avenue, and he lives at 5133.
Because he's the boy next door, which means he has to live either at 5133 Kensington Avenue or 5137, and 5137 wouldn't rhyme. That's a good example, I think, of two things. The way Hugh Martin, once he came up with the title, always served the title. So if you're going to write a song called The Boy Next Door, why not try and get the street address in there? He does so, and he does it very charmingly. And he also thought, not so much in terms of music or lyrics, but in overall song construction. I think that's what something he learned from his vocal arranging days. You think in terms of the overall effect of the words and music together. Here's another good example of that. The Trolley Song is a driving song, and one way to drive it right through to the end is with reinforced rhyme. Listen to this. As she started to leave, I took hold of her sleeve with my hand, and as if it were planned, she stayed on with me, and it was grand just to stand with her hand holding mine. I think that's a sextuple rhyme he puts in there. Hand, planned, and grand, stand, hand. A sextuple rhyme and a terrific finish.
I took hold of his sleeve with my hand, and as if it were planned, he stayed on with me, and it was grand just to stand with his hand holding mine to the end of the line.
But it was the third song that was to turn out to be the really big song. Things are not going well for the Smith family in St. Louis, and it may well be their last Christmas in their beloved home at 5135 Kensington Avenue. Next year they could be on the other side of the country, far away in New York, where their father has taken a job. And Tootie, Margaret O'Brien, the smallest girl, is devastated by this. They're not going to be able to see any of their friends. And so she sits disconsolate in the upstairs window looking out at the front yard of the family home. And her older sister, Esther, played by Judy Garland, winds up Tootie's little music box and for the first time ever, sings Hugh Martin's great song.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Will be near to us once more.
If I had sat down to try to write a hit Christmas song, I never could have written it. Fortunately, it never even crossed my mind that it would be recorded or that people would sing it on the radio. I just knew there was an important scene in the movie and I wanted to get the right song for it.
But by comparison with Frosty the Snowman or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or whatever, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas does touch people very deeply. It is one of those contemporary American Christmas standards that yeah. is very meaningful.
Oh, it is. As a matter of fact, our engineer, our sound engineer at Metro, couldn't see the knobs because Judy Garland's singing touched him so, and the tears were running out of his face, and he said, "I can't see the damn knobs." And it does affect people that way.
Someday soon, we all will be together. If the fates allow. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow.
O'Brien is sitting there looking very sadly out of her window at her snowmen in the garden outside, and Judy Garland as Esther, Margaret O'Brien plays the little girl Tootie, and Esther, Judy Garland plays her bigger sister Esther.
That's exactly right. I think the fact that they're actually moving has not quite sunk into Tootie until this moment, when they talk about the snowman and the fact they can't put the snowman on the train. And then it just all of a sudden blows her mind that they're leaving, and she runs out into the yard and starts destroying her snowman and saying, if we can't take him, I don't want anybody else to have him. And there's an interesting story about that hysterical scene. Don't know whether you heard it or not, but Minnelli did a dreadful thing to that little girl. He went into league with Margaret's mother, and they told her that her little dog had just been run over by a car just before the camera started to roll. And of course, Margaret went out of her mind, and Vincent kept the cameras rolling and made her do the lines. And that's how they got that terribly passionate scene from Margaret.
Well, whatever Vincent Minnelli did, it worked, because that is, without doubt, one of the most powerful moments in the picture.
Yeah, it's powerful, but I think it's child abuse. My great sadness was that I had so little contact with Judy Garland during the preparation for the film. In a way, it was the right thing to do because she and Roger Edens were so close, and he was to her what Kay Thompson was to me, the perfect mentor. But he set all her keys and taught her the songs, and so I never really heard her do it until I got on the sound stage, which was, you know, quite thrilling for me. But I would have loved to have worked with her because I'm a good coach.
Well, he was to get his opportunity a couple of years later. In part two of our salute to Hugh Martin, we'll hear his reunion with Judy Garland, explore Sinatra's relationship with the Hugh Martin songbook, and enjoy Hugh Martin numbers performed by a multitude of other artists. And from the Stein Archives, Hugh himself will perform Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas his way, and then Jessica Martin and I will do Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas our way. That's all coming up in part two next week. We'll close things out for now with Tony Bennett.
Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings. As I started to leave, I took hold of a sleeve with my hand. And as if it were planned, she stayed on with me, and it was grand just to stand with her hand holding mine.
On the Town is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises. All rights reserved.